Hello, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And like always, I have a question for you. What is your response when someone says they are blessed? For many modern people, we are triggered by this phrase. I mean, I think it's because our culture has made blessed synonymous with material gain or prosperous living. It's actually the subplot that says, God is on my side and not yours, that makes us so disturbed. So in today's podcast and post, I'm going to examine what it really means to be blessed and expose just how far off the trail we've gone. You see, the Beatitudes are not 8 tips for living better than everyone else, but the required lens through which we can discover not only the paradox of wisdom, but the humility to see ourselves in the lives of everyone else. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for coming back to another episode of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host, Kevin Winder. Welcome back. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things that I do just like you. And folks, I'm so grateful when you sign up for my weekly newsletter titled Winder's Windshield, or if you subscribe to this podcast, and it means a lot to me. It really does. And I love to hear the comments, feedback that you have in response to this. I get new folks signing up all the time, and I want to welcome you live on the air. Well, it's not actually live. It's a recorded podcast, but I do want to welcome everybody who has signed up this week and say goodbye to all those who have unsubscribed. I do get a fair share of both. So that's just life in the big city. Because we're talking about things that are unexpected. We're trying to expand our mind so that it can never regain the shape that it once was. And folks, if you're just tuning in, we are in the second week of a series on the Sermon on the Mount. Now, don't run away yet. This is not going to go the way you think it is. And I think it's going to help us understand a lot of things that go on in our culture, that go on in religion, and how far off the map we've actually gone. And so today is podcast number 185. It's called Blessing Evokes Gag Reflex. That's right, podcast 185, Blessing Evokes Gag Reflex. So what do I mean by all this? Well, if you're like me, if you're like most modern Americans, you're going to kind of get triggered whenever you hear somebody say, I'm so blessed. And I try and pull back and see the statement within the context of the life of the person saying it. But sometimes that's harder to do than others, right? I mean, you try and give somebody the benefit of the doubt. But when blessing is thrown around with phrases like, thoughts and prayers, I'm sending you, we kind of get this, at least I do, a gag reflex kind of wants to kick in. It's like, oh, please, what? Seriously? Is this where we're at? And if you've ever seen somebody like driving around in a fancy black Escalade Cadillac with those stick families following after a cross or a ichthus, which is that fish thing, symbol, you know, if you see that and it says, we're so blessed, you kind of get what I'm saying, right? It's like, yeah, we're blessed. We live in this big gated community. We have this really nice car. Man, we have all the toys. Our life is going great. That means God has given me the tailwind. And I understand how we get to that place. But folks, that is not the right place. And so our contemporary understanding of blessing really has this subtext, which I think annoys people. And that subtext is that of being God's favorite. I mean, think about it. That's even the storyline of the Hebrew scriptures. The God of Israel, nobody else's God, right? Our God can beat up your God. We are the chosen people, right? This is deeply embedded into the theologies and the framework of religion and the ideas of that people kind of import into their own life. And so they feel like, gosh, I've been a good boy. I've been a good girl. I read my Bible. I went to church. I turned my radio preset to K-Love and I tolerated mediocre music, and now God is going to give me the promotion. God is going to fulfill my dreams. God is going to heal and do all these things. And of course, there's pastors and teachers out there that talk about such things as though you're entitled to that. As God's child, you're entitled to being blessed, which is always converted into favor or prosperity. I mean, imagine two people going along the road together, and then one is blessed to find a $100 bill. And now, due to blessing, there is inequality between people. Now, does that storyline fit into your framework? Now, if your framework says, that's right, I'm on the winning team, so I win, then you have a win-lose duality, and you have missed the deeper teaching of Scripture. How's that for a shocking opener? Well, we're going to get there, and I'm going to prove it to you because we're talking about the Beatitudes, right? Blessed in our culture equals having stuff. Blessing has become synonymous with the favored one, the elect, those smart enough to pick the winning team. And if you think about all the bumper stickers and all the cheesy music lyrics and all the tribal language that describes blessing, it always picks it out as this ascent. Blessing is an ascending of your life. It's a rising up. It's the gaining of advantage. Blessing is the rise of power. Now, think about that for a minute. And I read Scripture, I often have to wonder if Jesus has kind of thrown up in his mouth a little bit at how the church seems to have adulterated his teaching on blessing. Now, how do I say a statement that's that bold, right? That this is causing a gag reflex even in Jesus' mind. Well, the reason is because our study is on the Sermon on the Mount, and we are now looking at the Beatitudes. And if you're not familiar with them, these are eight, and some scholars say there are more, some say less. But they're eight little fortune cookie statements which reveal that actually blessing is a descent. Blessing costs us something. These aren't, blessed are those with a good 401k. Blessed are those who live in gated communities. Blessed are those who have more than enough to get by. This is not the Beatitudes, but that is the framework of modern Christianity and often many frameworks for religious-minded people. So in our binary, our linear cause and effect mindset, which we are gifted with in America. Most people function. That's how their brain thinks. Linearly, binary, cause, effect. We always think of blessing as something we get if we do something. It's the quid pro quo, right? I do this for God and he blesses me. We see blessing as our reward for good behavior, for moral behavior, for, you know, not dating that girl, not going as far as you really wanted to, for holding your tongue and being nice, right? This is how you maintain and get God's blessing. And then, of course, you can see this mirrored in the ideas of the Old Testament and throughout Scripture, but just because it's reflecting this idea, it does not mean that it's actually advocating this idea. And how do I know that? Well, Jesus comes along and he gives this amazing sermon where he says, you've heard it said this thing, but I say this. In other words, he's undermining everything you've ever heard from your institutions of religion and faith. You see, blessing is ontological, not practical. What does that mean? It means that blessing is who we are. It is not what we do or what we get. You see, the blessed person, as we'll see in Jesus' discourse, is not he or she who's climbing in some egoic pursuit or trying to gain advantage over somebody else, or he or she, you know, rising up in power and finally getting to stick it to the people that had him down. That's not blessing. Blessing, according to Jesus, is he or she who descends into humility, placing others before themselves. Blessing is not the cause to having a charmed life. It's the effect of a soul found in tune with its maker and in tune with others. That's the bigger meta-narrative that actually comes from these Beatitudes. You want to test it? Let's find out. I mean, would our world call the following descriptions of people blessed? Right? I mean, Jesus said that the blessed, the makarios in the Greek, means happy. Happy are the poor in spirit, those who mourn. Happy are the meek. Happy are those who hunger and thirst for what is right. Blessed are the merciful. Blessed are the pure in heart. Blessed are peacemakers. Blessed are the persecuted, those doing the right things, right? If you're persecuted for doing the right thing. So being poor, being mournful, being meek, being hungry, being merciful, pure, a peacemaker, and persecuted. Is that our modern definition of being blessed? Is that what it looks like to be happy? You see, folks, the very first thing we're going to learn about the Beatitudes, and this is why I'm not going to spend 8 weeks and go through each one in great detail. There's a bazillion sermons and blogs and posts that you can hear pastors talk about them and wax on about that. But while they do that, they seem to miss this very important thing. And here it is. The first thing you learn and I learn about Jesus' wisdom through this teaching is paradox. You see, paradox is wisdom. Wisdom is paradox. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is down is actually the way up. Now, stop right there. Please do not skim over this. I'm not just playing with words here. Down is actually the way up. And when we asked last week, what can words do for our world now? Is there a presidential candidate that could actually say something that could make people believe again, that could give you the confidence that our world is heading in the right direction? Is there some, I mean, what can words really do? Aren't we too far gone for words? Well, folks, this is the answer to that question. Wisdom is paradox. You see, our default mode of living in the world is 180 degrees out of sync. Our navigation system is not calibrated to the GPS, and as a result, we've experienced suffering both as victims as well as the victor. And you don't think about that very often. We always see the victim as the suffering person. But those who are succeeding are suffering as well, though in a different way. You see, what Jesus is rolling out here, and we're going to build on this in the weeks to come, is a blueprint for his subversive kingdom. You see, he wasn't here to come and overpower the powers that be. There's no plan for Jesus to strong arm anybody. There's no, you know, getting people to resist, right? There's no let's line up and lock arms and just drag our heels in opposition. He's not amassing an irresistible army, and he's not planning to take anything over in the culture. You see, his plan is to turn from beneath, which is the very definition of subversion. See, while all our institutions teach us to zig, Jesus is offering us a zag. The kingdom that he's talking about, this heavenly kingdom, the kingdom that is here now and still yet to come, is powered from the inside out, not the outside in. See, every institutional power that you know tries to manipulate and control and take away your freedom by controlling the outside in, right? By limiting what you can and can't do, by forcing you to pay taxes, by forcing this upon you or that obligation upon you. But what Jesus is offering is something completely different. That means that once the kingdom he's promoting is actually grasped from the heart, there is no outside force, no institution, no circumstance of any kind that can take it away. We either enter this kingdom or we don't. But if we enter it, we enter it only through the ideology of paradox. Because we are off base. Our natural inclination is to go one way. In paradox is the wisdom that says, I know you think that's the way to go, but down is actually the way up. Now, if you catch that, you'll get the heart of all of Jesus' teaching. If you miss it, you're going to turn Jesus' teaching into an alternative religion, which is what mostly Christianity has done. So I imagine that those who were oppressed when Jesus gave this sermon were immediately pinned to his every word. I mean, the response of his audience is probably exactly the same response that some of you are having right now to this sermon. You know, a few people likely made the immediate connection and began joining the revolution that was emerging within their own soul. But most people, and this is probably a lot of you listening to this podcast today, most people will walk away from Jesus' sermon and from this educational point. You'll walk away very disappointed. You'll likely walk away very let down and confused because your pastors and your faith and your institutions of religion have misled you. Right? They've misled you to believe that the eastern sky is going to roll up like a lampshade and Jesus is going to come back with power and a giant can of whoop-ass, and he's going to put everybody who ever oppressed you into the dirt. We want a power bigger than the power that oppresses us. And so many people turn to their faith because they see it as a power bigger than their oppressor. That's how Jesus' audience certainly heard it. But Jesus gives that to their hearers. He certainly gives them a power bigger than their oppressor. But they don't recognize it because they're expecting this power to be an overpower. They don't expect the power to be something that they can do that day, that afternoon, this moment within their own heart. That doesn't seem like it's going to have the catch that they need. They want to be reinstated as those on top, as the blessed, as the winners, as the victorious, as the mighty, right? That's all the rhetoric around this whole subject. But you see, Jesus teaches that those that recognize their own complicity in small acts of evil, this is you speeding, this is you not letting somebody in when they need to merge, this is you trying to get a little bit of an advantage in school and at work by, you know, stealing the white out from the supply closet. This is taking a little bit of advantage with your hours and your labor. This is, right? These are all small acts that are just seemed like that's how we live. But until you recognize that these small acts of evil are ultimately complicit with oppression, that the oppressor doesn't give you permission to act this way, but your acting this way makes you the oppressor, right? See, it's only the bowed head that can kind of see one's oppressor is actually a version of themselves. And then they see that changing the world actually begins by changing oneself. You see, we barely have begun this sermon, and I think you can see why Jesus was killed within 3 years. Powers do not like to lose power. And this is true for the empire on the hill. It's true for the government that you send your taxes to. It's true for the church that you pay your tithe to, the religion that you subscribe to, the institution that gives you your recognition, your notoriety, and your fame, right? But this is also true for the ego within our heart. Power does not like to lose power. It's the same war. The same war in your heart is the same war that you see playing out on our nightly news. The truth is that if you win in the private place, then the public place is restored, right? If you're faithful in a little, you'll be faithful in a much. But if you can't manage the little thing in your heart, forget about making world change. See, if we ignore what's inside and suffering, then evil promulgates, right? If you forget that little thing that's going on, if you don't have the eyes to see the little blip on the screen, suffering and evil are just going to expand and spread, and that's why you see so much of it in the world. So if you want to fix the world's problem, you need to begin with you. And as Gandhi said, years later after Jesus, you need to be the change you wish to see in the world. And this is very true. It's as true then as it is today, as it was to the hearers of the Sermon on the Mount. So how vital are these words today? I mean, are you willing to die inside if that's what it means to be blessed? Right? Blessed is the person who lets somebody in traffic. Blessed is the person who doesn't insist on being in the left lane, going around everybody else, but can promote others in a traffic jam. Blessed is the person who says, you know what, I'm going to actually write down my time off because I took it. I didn't work. Blessed is the person that wins on the inside. You see, this is Jesus' message. Now, that may or may not translate into you being successful at work, right? You make those kinds of concessions so often in the world, you get run over, you get left behind, you get outdone, and you don't actually prosper. Your business plans oftentimes, if they're based in service of others, don't actually succeed. And yet here's Jesus saying, that's the blessed one. And so the kingdom, if you get that, has come to you. But if you think blessing is a material accumulation, if it's your social, racial, political, or financial advantage, then the kingdom remains very much in the distance for you. The blessed person has an open hand that freely gives and freely receives. Not the closed fist that is clutching and climbing and stammering to move itself. Right? Don't hang on to what you have with such tenacity. Don't think that you're going to just get that deep dream in your heart. The chances are that clutching to that is just a chasing after the wind. You see, the advantage of blessing is not measured by our common mindset, which is all jacked up and, like I said, 180 degrees out of sync. It's all based on this materialistic scale. But the advantage of blessing is our delight that emerges when we let go within the paradox of the soul, right? The blessed person is the one who can finally let it go. You have true inner spaciousness, true inner peace, because you're not trying to win. It's not a win-lose scenario. You see, if it's true that paradox is the new pattern, if it's true that down is actually the way up, then we must learn to examine anything to which we tightly cling. Greetings, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder from Beyond Everything Radio, and I really want to encourage you to go to my website right now and sign up for Winder's Windshield. That's my weekly newsletter, and you can find it at kevinwinder.com. When you sign up, you'll join all the others in the virtual space. Each Sunday morning, you'll get a link to my blog, my radio program, and my podcast. You'll be the first to access new content, uncoaching opportunities, and webinars, and so much more. Sign up now and you'll get a free e-version of my book, Getting Better When You Can't. Now, go to kevinwinder.com and remember I spell Kevin like the number 7. Go to kevinwinder.com and look for Winder's Windshield and sign up today.